Welcome back to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. And of course, the show will also be available on tsn.ca/Winnipeg. Momentarily, we're going to be joined by Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch to talk about the surprising St. Louis Blues, a team we're going to see in Winnipeg a little less than a month from now. Another Saturday afternoon contest, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is, actually. I checked because today's game is an afternoon game. I think we've had, this is number three on the year? Two or three?
Well,
three, including the Montreal game. The opener.
Right, that was on a Sunday.
Yeah. 4 o'clock.
And yeah, there only is one more afternoon game. That is, you're right, February 25th.
Is that when it is?
When the Blues come to town.
And they play an afternoon game in Pittsburgh on Hockey Day in Canada.
That's right, that was a late edition, right?
Yeah, because they were supposed to play in Pittsburgh on the Sunday, but the Penguins were nice enough to move it to the Saturday, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, I was talking to my dad about St. Louis yesterday because we're going to be in St. Louis to watch a baseball game on the way to Drew's wedding. My dad was telling me about the time he was in St. Louis, and my dad grew up with Bobby Clark and Flin Flon, and he was at a math conference in St. Louis, and the Flyers just happened to be in St. Louis.
Mm. And Bobby Clark showed up at the math conference.
He did run into Bobby Clark, and Bobby Clark invited my dad to sit and eat lunch with the Philadelphia Flyers, who were playing at the Blues, and I believe Gump Worsley was there or playing for the Blues at the time, and my dad met Gump Worsley and all these guys on the Flyers, the Broad Street Bullies.
And so, that explains why your middle name is Gump.
Exactly. Ezra Gump Ginsburg.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
People don't know that I have a middle name and it's Gump.
People don't know that you have a middle name?
I don't have a middle name, actually.
Really?
It was supposed to be Jude. But anyways, that's a long story. I don't have a middle name.
I'm not even sure you have a first name.
I'm not even sure what you're talking about right now.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome back to the program from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Jeremy Rutherford. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
A pleasure as always, Jeremy. We looked at the NHL standings this week, and for a lot of people here in Winnipeg, they might not have noticed the Blues all the way up at the top there. And, you know, we just have to get you on to talk about the surprising Blues. And it's really been since they hired Ken Hitchcock to replace Davis Payne. You know, start off first and foremost, you know, talk about Ken Hitchcock's effectiveness in turning this thing around for the St. Louis Blues this year.
Yeah, I think he's had a big effect on this team, obviously. But you go back to Davis Payne before the change was made. The team was 6-7. It had played, a number of its first games on the road, so kind of a tough challenge that Davis Payne and the Blues had from the get-go. But then Doug Armstrong, the Blues general manager, decided to make the change early on, and the Blues players have responded. It's real tough to put your finger on what exactly has made the difference. Ken Hitchcock and the Blues have had a lot of home games, so I know they've had that to their benefit. But just comparing the two coaches, I think Ken Hitchcock came in here and his resume spoke for itself, and I think a lot of players put trust into the fact that Ken Hitchcock had seen every situation, and whatever they ran into, he could help get them out of it, and they've really, really taken to him, and the team's played well.
Yeah, Jeremy, you mentioned the home games. They've played three more home games and are an amazing 17-3-3. If you look at the special teams of the St. Louis Blues, the penalty kill and the power play, they're not at the top of the league, and the Blues are right now. Is it the 5-on-5 play? What is it specifically about the Blues that has them playing so well?
Well, that's the one thing that's been the same through both coaches, Davis Payne and Ken Hitchcock, is that the 5-on-5 play was really good, and it was the special teams. They were both 30th in the league at one point earlier in the year. I know the power play has jumped up to about 22 here recently, and the penalty kill has gone to 18 or so. The power play has had a little bit of success here lately as the team just kind of dummy it down and put pucks on net, and that's what's worked for them here lately. But that's what folks in St. Louis have been wondering, is if the Blues ever got the power play going, how good they could be, because they've already got the 5-on-5 play down. And, you don't have to, as Boston showed and other teams have showed, to have the top 5 or top 10 power play in the league to go deep in the playoffs. But you need it to be efficient. And for a while there, the power play wasn't even efficient. But now it's catching fire a little bit.
Jeremy, can you give us an update on the concussions of status of both Winnipegger Alex Steen and veteran Andy McDonald?
Yeah, on Alex Steen, he was said to be coming back possibly this past game Thursday night. Then the word was he might play Saturday, and now it turns out that he's still not ready to go. The energy's not quite there. The conditioning's not quite there. So they're going to hold him out until next week. And then with Andy McDonald, he looks good to go. I can't say that it's going to be in the next couple games. It might be another week or so. But he's in practice. He's got the no-contact jersey on. He's looking really, really good. And I think it's going to be a matter of time before they allow him to take the red sweater off and start bumping around, and then be no time before he's out there after that.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. We're joined by Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, you know, sort of a quick question here, but a straightforward one. Is David Backes the emotional leader on this team?
Yeah, definitely. You know, before he was named captain this year, there was kind of a movement to make him the captain the past couple of years. The Blues had the C on Eric Brewer and then moved him last season. And we did a poll at STLtoday.com, and David Backes was an overwhelming favorite to get the C. And the Blues gave it to him. I just think he's the type of leader that the Blues have had over the years. You talk about the Brian Sutters, Chris Pronger, Al MacInnis. He goes out there and gives it his all. You know, you can run out all the cliches. But I think people do gravitate towards David. And then also, here lately, whoever plays on his line seems to get out of a funk. You know, Chris Stewart's gone up there. He struggled this year, but playing alongside of David Backes, he's played well. David opens up a lot of space and creates opportunities for guys. And I really do think the Blues made the right choice giving him the C. And he's proven, even with that responsibility, to be a better player.
Jeremy, the Blues picked up Jason Arnott and Jamie Langenbrenner in the offseason. Can you talk about how important the addition of those two veterans have been?
Well, I just wrote about Jason Arnott today. The word when the Blues signed him was they needed two things. They needed a little more voice in the locker room because they do have a young team, and they also needed offensive depth. They didn't need Jamie Langenbrenner and Jason Arnott to come in and be top six guys and score 25 goals. They needed them to come in and solidify the third and fourth lines and just help out, and they've done that effectively. Jason Arnott has 12 goals. He had two a couple nights ago, and he's playing really well. He's a plus 12, and you know, there's some you know, in his past with Nashville, and he had a cup of coffee in Washington, people kind of question what effect he had on the locker room, but I can tell you here in St. Louis, it's been nothing but positive with this group. And then Jamie Langenbrenner, the same thing. You know, again, they weren't looking for numbers from him, and he hasn't really put up numbers. But I think what he's done in the locker room, and also the experience that he's given that third line, he's playing the game the right way, and everybody else is kind of learning from his example.
Jeremy, you mentioned Chris Stewart just a little bit earlier. It's been just short of a big Eric Johnson trade was completed. Can you give maybe a little bit, you know, your thoughts on the trade 11 months later?
Well, I think it's a lot different than what most people thought when the trade was made, and a lot different than people thought at the end of last season, because, you know, to give you the numbers, Chris Stewart scored 15 goals and had 23 points in 26 games to wrap up last year with the Blues, and people were excited thinking that the Blues may have landed one of the league's best up-and-coming power forwards, and he struggled throughout the early part of the season. Even though he scored a couple goals lately, you don't quite see the player that you saw at the end of last year. He needs to, as the coaches say, move his feet a little more and keep it going and get in the right places. He's not doing that as much as he did last year. But to look at the big picture of the trade, I think the name that people in St. Louis are obviously becoming more familiar with is Kevin Shattenkirk. He appeared to be a throw-in in the deal that was made when the Blues sent Eric Johnson to Colorado. But Kevin Shattenkirk has been every bit brilliant for the Blues. He's right up there with Alex Pietrangelo in terms of his puck-moving ability and his shot and offensive defenseman. He's been terrific. So I know the Colorado Avalanche got a good player in Eric Johnson, and I know he's going to do well for them. But I think with Kevin Shattenkirk playing now for the Blues. And if you can get Chris Stewart going again, I think the Blues still like this trade.
Jeremy, the St. Louis, the hockey world lost Ron Curran earlier this week. He spent a decade as the general manager in St. Louis. Can you talk about his impact on the St. Louis hockey scene?
Yeah, definitely. You know, here in St. Louis, I've lived here my whole life. I did not cover the Blues during Ron Curran's years, but I would venture to say that if you put together a list of the top five most influential people in Blues hockey history, Ron Curran would be in the top five. He's still revered. People the past couple of years always asking how he's doing. You know, they were saddened this week to learn that the professor had passed away. He was just so animated. I mean, one person told me the other day as we put together stories on his passing was that whenever something bad happened on the ice, whether it was a bad call or the Blues made a bad play, you're talking about 18,000 eyes turning and looking up towards the management booth to see his reaction, because he was known to rip phones off the wall and punch holes in the ceiling, do all kinds of stuff. And I know he had strong ties to Montreal, where he won a number of Stanley Cups, and he did not win a Stanley Cup in St. Louis, but he really did believe in this franchise and hope to take it to that point someday. And although he didn't quite get there, I think people still revere him as somebody who helped the Blues along tremendously throughout the years.
One final question, Jeremy. We'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the ownership situation in St. Louis. I mean, they're doing so well on the ice and then off ice with this ownership. It sounded like Matthew Hulsizer was poised to purchase this team, and then it sort of fell by the wayside. Can you give an update on that and where it stands? And is anybody, in terms of the players, are they at least a bit concerned about the ownership situation?
Yeah, it's a good question. A lot has transpired here lately. Matthew Hulsizer signed a purchase agreement to buy the Blues back in October, and then it was a situation where he was trying to come up with the financing, prove his financial situation to the league. And he had already, as you guys well know, looked into the Phoenix situation, moved from there, and really put his interest heavy into the Blues. But then there was a deadline established by the National Hockey League of December 31st to have his financing in place. And that deadline came and passed without a deal done with the Blues. And what happened was the league terminated Hulsizer's purchase agreement with the team. And now Tom Stillman, who is the Blues' minority owner, and he's been trying to buy the team for a long time and be the majority owner, he has exclusivity for about the next 65 days or so. And so he's trying to prove his financing to the league, and all signs point to him being able to do that. And, it appears at this point that Tom Stillman might be the next owner of the Blues here in the coming weeks.
Well, hopefully that gets settled and the team continues their strong play on the ice. Jeremy, we're going to see you in Winnipeg in another 6 weeks or so?
Yeah, we'll be there. I'm looking forward to it. My first trip, and everybody speaks highly of the team and the atmosphere and the rink and how things are going for the franchise. So, I know here in St. Louis, we went without the NFL for a number of years after the Cardinals left and went to Arizona. And when the Rams came in 95, it was a thrill to get football back. So I can only imagine what you guys have gone through and how excited you are to have a club.
Every day is a happy day here in Winnipeg now, except when it's minus 40 outside.
As it might be at the end of February, unfortunately. Wear your coat is what we suggest.
I'll bring it. I'll definitely bring it.
All righty. Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Take care, Jeremy. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. On the other side, we're going to go deep into the Mike Camilleri-Rene Bork trade. We'll start with George Johnson from the Calgary Herald. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David is a lifelong Winnipegger who brings an intimate knowledge and tremendous passion for the city of Winnipeg to all of his dealings. Call David at 230-6129 for all your real estate needs. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. I believe we are getting George Johnson on the line any second now. Once we do,
it's been too long since we've had George on. He's always an awesome guest.
Yeah, George is he's brutally honest, which from our perspective, always is always what we're looking for. Just like we're brutally honest with you, Ezzy.
Yeah, and brutally critical.
Well, that's
borderline
not,
mean.
I don't think we're borderline mean
no, I'm
ever.
Kidding. Mm. I kid, Drew. I kid.
Yeah.
Quickly on this Camilleri and Bork trade, it kind of took over the press box on Thursday night at the hockey game, at the San Jose game. Nobody knew who Camilleri was traded for. I know much has been made about the logistics and everything that had to work out in terms of Camilleri being pulled from the game. He's pulled from the game. I don't mind them. They got ripped for pulling from the game. Well, you have to protect an asset. If he's in the middle of a game and he's been, you don't want to have the deal fall apart because he's in the game. Now, you could ask the question, why was he in the game in the first place if they were so close to a deal? That's the better question for me than why'd you pull him.
Agreed. And I guess the reason was because in order for him to be part of that conference call, is what Bob McKenzie said, he had to be pulled from the game.
Well, why start him? Why put him in? Baseball around the tread. George is actually he's held up for a few minutes, so we'll get to George again in a little bit. Yeah. But you're absolutely right. In baseball, when they have a trade that's right on the about to happen, they just don't play the guy.
And I guess like Richie said, if there's an inkling, or if there's not an inkling, but if there's any chance that you're going to complete that trade at night, and what Bob McKenzie said is that. The trade was something that didn't just kind of happen. That day there was a call made Wednesday night. The trade was completed Thursday, but it was something that was the stage was set earlier, weeks earlier.
I understand them waiting on Bork, waiting for that game to start so Bork gets another suspension game out of his way.
Yep.
And I understand that in terms of the optics of everything. But, I don't think the Habs should be criticized for pulling from the game. I mean, that's you protect an asset. You made a trade. You think it's a good trade. You want to get the deal done. You don't risk injury. That's not a classless move. It's classless firing the coaches on game days. That's classless.
Yes.
Especially if you have off days prior to then. But pulling a player in the middle of a game, that's part of the business. Guy's getting paid $6 million average, a year. He can deal with being pulled from a game.
You're 100% right. I mean, that's a business move.
Yeah.
And that was also sense of it from Bob McKenzie's analysis of it. It's also a bit of a legal move and something that is required. So the trade. You're right. When we were at the game on Thursday versus the Sharks, you mentioned that right off the bat. You said L.A. And it was a good guess. And the reason why it was a good guess is because the first team that was mentioned as for sure where Camilleri was not going was L.A.
Well, the Kings,
so it was a good guess.
Released a statement saying it wasn't he wasn't coming to them.
I didn't think Calgary.
We should mention nobody did. I don't think we should mention prior to the deal being after the deal is made. There's been reports that teams weren't even aware he was available. And so apparently what happens, and I think Sean was who is our guest next segment.
Sean Gordon
talked about how Gauthier gets his eye on a certain player and he just sticks on that player. He wanted Rene Bork and he was going to get it done. But
does he not know anything about the art of negotiating?
Well, that's a good question.
You create. I mean, you're selling an asset.
Exactly.
You create a bidding war, and you're going to do better.
Exactly, and that's exactly right, Drew. And if there's our teams that aren't aware, this goes back to the Joe Thornton trade, one of the worst trades in NHL history. If teams aren't aware that a player is available,
How do you make it? I mean, I don't know the answer to this. And next time we have Chevy on, maybe we'll ask him. How do you let the NHL know a player is available?
Well, how do you let
send emails?
I was going to say emails, or they send out a fax.
And I'm sure if you at the time back in 2005-2006, if you said Joe Thornton's available, you would have heard either laughter or the telephone clicking. Yeah. But that was a bad trade.
Joe Thornton's available for Brad Stewart, Wayne Primo.
And it's
Marco Sturm, and I think there might have been a first-round pick.
It's pretty obvious that Gauthier and Feaster were negotiating, and there was nobody else involved.
I like the trade from Calgary's perspective. I mean, the risk is not that significant. Adam Proto on Twitter, who's very funny, @Proto.
Adam, on friend of illegal.
Yeah, from the Hockey News, said he can't wait till the trade deadline where Calgary flips Camilleri for a huge haul, a much bigger haul than they just traded to get him.
Not going to happen.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, Drew. I mean, it depends.
It was a joke, I assume.
Depends on what they do, and I'm not so sure.
I don't think they're going to. They should.
I think this deal is a slight win for Calgary. I don't think it's as big of a win as people are making it out to be. I don't. I mean, you have to take everything into consideration here.
Let me ask you this question.
Okay.
Let me ask you this question. If everybody's speculating that Mike Campbell or that Pierre Gauthier is out at the end of the year, right?
Well, that's the question we want to ask Sean. Right, why is he making a deal if he's out?
Exactly. And we'll ask Sean Gordon.
Remus is correcting us just to go back to the Joe Thornton trade. No first round pick in that.
As he says, it was that bad for Boston.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just, it's just a cluster
bleep.
It's a cluster.
It's a cluster bleep.
As far as this trade, Drew, from each perspective, from each team's perspective, I think I do agree with you that it's a good trade for Calgary. I think it's in a sense, it's a good trade for both teams, and I don't think there's a clear-cut winner yet. They're taking more salary on, and we're going to talk to George Johnson about that. That's
but for a shorter duration.
Shorter duration, yeah.
But they're taking more salary on. Now, I want to get in on this, because Bork does fill needs that the Habs have.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what does Bork bring to the table.
I mean, you know, you talk about his inconsistency. Well, he puts up the same amount of points. I was looking at the numbers. Actually, funny, I looked at the numbers, and I was online, and I read Bob McKenzie, and he had computed the same similar numbers in terms of goals per game. I mean, they produce.
You know, I've never seen Richie and Bob McKenzie in the same room at the, time. I mean, wonder if they're one and the same.
You were on set of TSN SportsCenter.
Yeah,
you met Bob McKenzie.
Sports desk back in the day.
Sports desk.
But, you know, he wasn't.
Wow.
With
Mark Bunting.
You know, he wasn't. He's not that much better in terms of the stats than Kamler. Now, I know they're different players, but what I'm saying is Bork is produced similarly to Camilleri. He's a better skater. He's bigger. He's got, and they both have terrific shots. Camilleri is more of a, you know, he's a sniper per se. But I Bork does add the element of size that Montreal's been seeking. And sure, he may be inconsistent, but he does add a different element to that team, and that team's all a bunch of small guys. So I don't mind it from that perspective. Now, he's got $3.3 million cap hit, but it's for a long duration. So while you take less of a cap hit now, you are taking a salary commitment on for a longer period of time, so that needs to be taken into account as well. The throw-ins, well, we'll ask George and Sean about that.
By most accounts, the throw-ins are...
There's a reason why they're called throw-ins.
Yeah.
Why they're called leftovers.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, some people think Kari Rahmo actually has his numbers in the KHL have been terrific. Some people think he could be a backup or even eventually succeed Keprusov in Calgary.
How many years ago did Montreal draft Kari Rahmo?
No, he was drafted by Tampa.
Sorry, he's drafted by Tampa. So how many years ago has he been playing in the KHL?
Confused with Kari Taco.
He's 25 years old.
So...
Well, I mean,
goalies develop late.
Looking
right,
at 2004, 2003.
You're talking about Kiprasov is getting older.
Yeah.
And Holland.
Look, I don't have a problem with him being included in the trade, but he's not the key to the trade.
Montreal gets a second rounder, too.
Yeah.
Calgary very well missed the playoffs. So, I mean, that needs to be taken into account as well. A fifth rounder is much ado about nothing.
Yep.
And Patrick Holland, third or fourth line projection. So,
Rene Bork, you know, in 2010, 2011, 27 goals, 23 assists.
Yeah.
In 2009, 2010, 27 goals, 31 assists.
I mean, for an inconsistent guy, that's pretty consistent.
Well, he's consistent. I think people.
Why don't we go to an early break here, get Sean on, and then get George on at 11:30?
Well, yeah. Or 10:30.
That's right.
Sorry, I got the Eastern time.
Yeah, I know. You got tripped up by the computer clock.
Yeah, we got our...
Okay, let's do that. Let's go to break. When we come back, Sean Gordon from the Globe and Mail is going to join us. We'll try and get George Johnson on after that. Much more to come. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website, of course, is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Carbone, coal-fired pizza, home of Canada's...
It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day.
Home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone, coal-fired pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked. Well done. Timmy, you want to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline?
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome back to the program a good friend of this show. He's been on numerous times. He's from the Calgary Herald. George Johnson, welcome to the program. How are you this morning?
Oh, we're just getting set for Daryl's bit of one-man show down at the Dome here, which should be fascinating, whatever he comes up with.
We will definitely ask you about that towards the end of this interview, because I'm sure you're on pins and needles excited about it.
We all are, yeah.
You know, let's start. We have to talk about the trade happened earlier this week. The Flames reacquired Mike Camilleri in exchange for Rene Bork. Simple question, who's the winner in the trade, if there is one?
Well, you know, I think you could make I'm not trying to fudge, but I think you could make an argument, for both sides, in the sense that if you're looking at the two principals, Rene Bork has just been a maddeningly inconsistent type of guy here. He's big, he's strong, he can skate. You know, he's got a great eye for the net, but he just goes these huge gaping gaps where he just doesn't seem to be motivated at all. And so, you know, Montreal's deal is going to have to be, they're going to have to be able to find a way to kick him and kick him hard to get him going. The man's 30 years old now. You think he'd have figured it out. Yeah. And from this standpoint, you know, after Michael Camilleri had those 13 goals in 19 games in the playoffs and became a Montreal icon for a brief time, he's struggled to score, too. The Flames are obviously banking on the fact that he knows this city, he knows this team, he knows a lot of the players on it, and they do have the advantage of knowing more about the player that they're getting than Montreal does about the player that they are.
George, in acquiring Mike Camilleri, the Flames have taken on a significant amount of salary.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a good strategy long-term for Jay Feaster?
Well, you know, if you look at Jay Feaster, he's got some contracts that he was saddled with from the previous regime. Mm-hmm. I think we can go back to the Daryl Sutter thing now, that are coming off the books at the end of this season. He's got some long-term injury guys that he's gonna, you know, he's going to put on IR for a longer period of time. Alex Tanguay, David Moss, people like that. So I think he thinks he can make it work. And you know, it's about making the playoffs for this team right now. You know, it's kind of like the team that you know trades for Kiprasov if he's available, or Ginla if he's available at the trade deadline. If this team's out of it, let's worry about right now, and in the summer we'll figure out the numbers. And I think that's the way that Jay's looking at it. He's trying to make a statement to people here anyway that they're serious about making the playoffs this year.
Is that a good strategy?
I don't know. I've been so beaten down over here in the last 3 or 4 years that I'm not sure what a good strategy is anymore.
They take their hockey, you know, seriously in Calgary if they're beating the reporters now.
Oh, no, well. We've been trying to beating ourselves more than anything, trying to figure out what in heaven's name has been going on.
Yeah.
For 3 or 4 years here. You know what? If you watched Renny Bork play, you know, you just wanted to go put your head in an oven after a while. Because, I mean, really, when he plays, he's just amazing. And this year he's had 2 suspensions for absolutely needless, ridiculous things. And, you know, it's becoming more than a bad habit with him. So, and they're stuck with him Montreal now, it's another 4.5 years.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is a long contract that he signed with Daryl, of course. And so,
are you going to ask him about that?
Yeah. Well, I didn't see him on the way out of town. So, you know, it's. I think it was. It's one of those trades that it sounds awful and to say it, but it might work out both ways. And the Flames think in Kerry Ramo that they've got a real good goaltending prospect. You know, Kiprasov's not going to last forever. And as I said, I would think if they're out of the playoff race as we approach a trade deadline, a guy like Mika Kiprasov, you look at Chicago, you look at Detroit, you look at Philadelphia, he's going to be a real sought-after commodity. And you know, you have to look ahead and Mika Kiprasov may not be here next year. So from that standpoint, I think they're happy.
20 minutes past 10, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick, GMC Game Day, Devils Jets, puck drop at 2 o'clock. We're joined by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald. George, you mentioned Kerry Ramo. Let's talk about that. Is he now is he the Flames goaltender of the future now?
Oh, we've had so many of them here. Again, I'm sounding world-weary, but if you'd been here, you'd know what we're going through. You know what? Leland Irving has come in here, and here's a guy that they drafted, that you know, they put a lot of time and a lot of money into, and he's come in here and he's played very, very well. He's been put in some jackpot situations. You know, he stopped 50 shots and lost in overtime. You know, it's one of these things. So at some point, they're going to have to determine who it is. I would think that they would have to give Irving. I mean, he's their guy, I think, at the moment. But as long as Kiprasov's here, there's always that temptation to play him 82 games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. But, you know, he usually plays his 72 to 74. So, you know, at that some point they're not going to have that anymore. And I think that if they stockpile goaltenders, young goaltenders that they think have a future, then they're at least going to have a choice when it comes time for the magnificent Mika to leave.
George, you mentioned Daryl Sutter earlier, who's going to be one of the headliners in the Sutter versus Sutter Battle Royale tonight.
Oh, yeah.
The Flames didn't sign Mike Camilleri before, at the price that he was signed to in Montreal. Why are they taking him now if he's at that same price?
Well, I think their needs are different. I mean, if you look at this team at that time, they thought that Rene Bork was on the cusp of being a real NHL star. And when you look at the abundant gifts he has in the package that he brings, you would think that that's true. Again, I think a lot of this is done because Camilleri in his 1 year here was immensely popular. I mean, you know, he was just, to this day, you would still get people emailing that are hot about the fact that they let Camilleri go, right? So they bring in a guy that is known in the community, is very, very popular in the community, is a good talker, and Lord, there's not many of them down there. So we are very, very happy. And, you know, I think that their needs are different, and I think that they think that here, where he had his best year, and maybe not tonight because he's going to start on the second line, but eventually hooked up with Jerome Iginla, they had a great collaboration in the 1 year they were here, that it'll, you know, it'll bring out the best in him.
You mentioned that, George, you know, Camilleri is well-liked in the community. There were rumblings when leaving Montreal that he wasn't that well-liked in the locker room.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit about, was he well-liked in the locker room the first time around in Calgary?
Well, I think the thing is, and we hear this as far back as L.A. when they got him from L.A., because Craig Conroy had played in L.A. with Mike. And, you know, and the thing about Camilleri is he is outspoken. He's a guy that's not going to prattle those cliches that you hear, you know, until you want to, you know, hit your head with a shovel in rooms across the NHL. I mean, he's articulate, he's outspoken, maybe to his detriment, and you know, in some cases, and that irks a lot of players who are used to the status quo and, you know, hockey cliches 101 and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I think he can rub guys the wrong way because, in a sense, he's honest. In a sense, he's, you know, a bit more blunt than your average NHL hockey player. So I don't think there's any question he can rub some of them the wrong way. The question is, the point is, if he's scoring goals, which he wasn't in Montreal, people will, in the room will forgive a lot of that stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And so the key for him to come here is to be Michael Camilleri and to score some goals, and then everything will be fine. But if he's Michael Camilleri and he produces the way he did in Montreal with 9 goals this year, then you're probably going to have some friction.
Well, George, as I'm sure you know, we give 110% here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we take it one question at a time, of course.
Oh, you know, and God love you for it.
You know, we got to talk Sutter versus Sutter. It came out that they started talking to each other again after over a year of incommunicado.
Yeah.
You know, how was it just that poisonous by the time the relationship ended in Calgary?
It was not happy. I mean, it's like somebody was saying down here, the only time you should get family, work with family, is in an Italian restaurant. I mean, you know, I mean, so when Daryl, I mean, Brent knew Daryl, obviously, but he didn't know what it was like to work with Daryl, and Daryl is an intense, demanding guy. And
really? I never knew that.
Yeah, exactly. And, Lord, anyway, but we've never encountered anything like that,
right.
You know, and it's just, It was really toxic by the time it was over. It was just, I mean, they weren't speaking. It was a really, really difficult situation. You know, it was just a really, really difficult situation. And, you know, it was funny. I saw a quote from Daryl. I mean, we put in requests for him. He didn't call us back. Big surprise. And, you know, but I saw a quote from him on the LA Times site basically saying, oh, it's just another game. And you're sitting there going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, Rhett Warner was telling one of our hockey beat writers, Scott Cruikshank, he said when they, even after they beat them in the playoffs, whenever they would play San Jose, when the Flames would play San Jose and Daryl was a coach, he could barely speak the day of the game. You know, that's how much he wanted to whoop their hineys and show them they made a mistake and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So tonight is just going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's Camilleri's debut. Daryl's going to come back. You know, he's got his media availability at 11:30 after the skate. He will either A, come out and be caustic to us, B, try and throw us a curveball and be sweet as pie, which is what most people think will happen, or C, he'll send out Bill Ranford just because he can. And you know, so we're all we're all agog. This is going to be grand theater no matter how he plays it this morning.
I think the for good reason, I don't know if you saw Saturday Night Live last week, but they had a Daryl Sutter interview on Saturday,
oh, did they really?
On Saturday Night Live as, you know, they did this, they were selling, it was a, supposedly a new tool they were selling, you know, a coach decoder. And the first interview they played was Daryl Sutter giving one of his non-answers.
Was that the Barkley thing?
That was the Barkley. It's available,
okay.
I'm sure.
I've seen that. I didn't know it was on SNL.
Yeah. It was on.
Oh, yeah.
It was on SNL. So Daryl Sutter's obviously reaching the big time.
Oh yeah.
Oh no, he's you know what, and he's an interesting. He's a really interesting guy in small doses.
I would. I mean, free piece of advice. I wouldn't suggest starting the interview by calling him Hollywood.
No, I. You know what? I'm just going to sit back and let it unfold. You know, and it'll either be really good. Or it'd be really bad, but either way, it's a good story.
Either way, George yep. Johnson from the Calgary Herald. Enjoy tonight. Thanks for as always for joining us on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay,
take care, George. Thanks a lot, George. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to try and hook up with Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail if we can. 30 minutes to go. This has flown by.
Unbelievable. 30 minutes.
Guest after guest.
By the way, quick note. Kerry Ramo was actually drafted under Jay Feaster's watch in Tampa before he got fired.
There you go. There's Richie with the good point. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill. Cheer Bar and Grill is your place to be for all of your hockey action.
In fact,
go there on January 17th, January 19th, and January 21st. Because on the 21st, the Bud Bus is showing up.
Yep.
The Bud Bus is showing up, giving away two pairs of tickets to the hockey game. Show up there. Doors open at 3 o'clock. Bus arrives at 10 after 5. You might get to go to the hockey game just for being at the Cheer.
Drew, this
Cheer
Tuesday,
Bar.
Yep. Sorry, go ahead.
And then the 17th and the 19th, we're also going to be giving away a pair of tickets each night.
Yep.
So get to the Cheer Bar and Grill.
Tickets?
Yep. Yeah. Cheer Bar and Grill, located at the corner of Stradbrook and Osborne. Get there for your chance to go see the hockey game on January 21st.
Yeah, Drew, you mentioned, I just wanted to make sure that you got that in, that we will be there starting this Tuesday giving away tickets.
Well, of course.
You got that in.
We'll be there on Monday as well. Yeah. So you should come there on Monday because we're going to be giving away, as we are for every road game.
I won't be there, just so all my fans know, I won't be there because I'm going to be at Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, the new movie.
Really? You know already that you're going there?
Yep.
With who?
Pre-booked.
The girl?
No, by myself.
Tons of art. So Richie and I will be there on Monday, as we are for all Jets away games. Tuesday, they're giving away tickets. Monday, we're going to give away a lot of great stuff. So just make it your it's the Illegal Curve Road headquarters.
Yeah, you got to go to the Cheer. It's awesome. They've transitioned it into a sports bar. They're getting new TVs there. The owner, Brian, has told us all about. And
it's not like they don't already have terrific TVs.
Oh, there's a big screen, projection screen. It's
bigger
it's
and
good
better.
Times.
Bigger, better, and Ezzy. Can't ask for much more
not
than
Monday,
that.
Not Monday, though, because I'll be a Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Do you work for the movie company?
Yes, I work for Paramount.
What's that movie about?
I have no idea.
It's about spies.
I just like saying Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
It strikes me as the kind of movie you'd enjoy there, Richie. A little bit of a psychological thriller,
Drew, how is Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol?
I wouldn't know. I haven't seen it. Chuck Fletcher of
Mission Impossible was Drew's attempt to order a bagel tonight and tomorrow.
That was mission successful.
Impossible is me trying to coax you to not order the bagel. Sorry.
Yeah, it says the guy who had three coffees and a Diet Coke this morning. Drive your high horse, just ride yourself right off the high horse. Minnesota was once the best team in the NHL. They're now...
Well, for like a week.
Well, no, it was for longer than a week. They had
3 weeks.
They were once the best team in the NHL. They're now They're now barely hanging on to eighth spot in the Western Conference. They are 2-7-1 in their last 10, and General Manager Chuck Fletcher is going off on his veterans.
I have an idea. Okay, say it first.
Here's the quote. he gives the quote to Ben Gosling of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Says there's 12 or 15 players not going hard, is what his quote was. He says if we can do something externally great, as in a trade, but we've got to be much better, and we have been much better. You don't win 17 out of 20 games due to luck.
Obviously, no, you actually do.
Obviously, we've played well this year, wrong. And we've had success playing a certain way.
Yeah.
So we know we can do it. The question is, how do we get back to doing it?
Chuck, the idea to get back to doing it is adding more talent to your roster and stop placing unrealistic expectations on your team and your coaches like you did with Todd Richards last year with a terrible roster. All you did is make a couple of moves, added veterans who are past their prime or guys who aren't as good as you thought they were, placing further pressure on your coach to play a defensive system with a poor defensive roster.
I agree.
Rely too heavily on your goaltending and then call out people as a scapegoat as opposed to doing a job for yourself.
Okay, let's set aside
next
the
topic. You sound passionate about it.
Chuck Fletcher always calls everybody out. Now what about the job he's done?
Let's throw out the Luck for a second. The Wild overachieved. I mean,
because of their goaltending. As soon as their goaltending stopped playing otherworldly, they were getting back to earth, and they're a bad team.
Shouldn't they be trading Josh Harding right now for something? I mean, can you get a first round pick for Josh Harding?
I'm shocked. Danny Heatley didn't perform this year. Oh wait, I watched him the past 2 years, and he was brutal.
Can you get a first-round pick for Josh Harding?
No, if you trade a first-round pick for Harding, you're out of your mind. Call Greg Sherman, see how that worked out for you.
some teams are put a premium on goaltending, and he's a great goaltender. He seems as though he's a great goaltender.
You think he is? You're not going to give a first-round pick for him.
I don't know. Why not?
I'd ask you, why?
Well, because if you're in desperate need of goaltending, and you're a team that's one of the top,
getting Nabokov for a bucket of chicken.
Not anymore. Rick DiPietro's on the IR now.
Yeah, but for a bucket of chicken, and you're going to trade a big draft pick for Harding, and he's not that much better or worse than him. I mean, I don't know. I just think that Chuck Fletcher's got to look in the mirror. Next topic.
Okay, next topic. I didn't even know we had next topic was this. This is an alternate rapid fire or something. Richie's getting flustered. Guy Boucher slams the NHL scheduling as the reason for the Tampa Bay Lightning's latest loss. Here's the quote. We're already behind the eight ball before the game even starts, Boucher said. If we would have played at least one good game on the road on a back-to-back, I would say we can do this. We can manage. We have never done it. We've always got our butts whipped and looked horrible.
Okay, so why don't you look at coaching and see whether or not the team's rested enough, if you're practicing too much or too little, or just look at the 43-year-old goaltender you have at the corner of your bench who's showing his age and can't stop a beach ball.
Yeah, it's always a problem when you're starting to blame scheduling. Everyone has to deal with scheduling. The Jets are in the Southeast Division. The Jets have to deal with an absolutely horrible schedule, and that's why Claude Noel was getting so much praise for us. The Jets went on that road trip at the beginning of the season, and they had trouble, but they came back and played well. And it's always a problem when you start blaming scheduling. There's a lot more problems in Tampa Bay. What about that secondary scoring that did them so well last year? That's non-existent last year. Where's a guy like Teddy Purcell this year?
Yep.
I mean. That's the big problem in Tampa Bay, and Guy Boucher, has to take some of the blame, but he doesn't take all of the blame.
No,
there.
But I mean, stop blaming the schedule.
Brian Burke, who, by the way, if you're sitting at home listening to us, and
I can't believe you're on Brian Burke's Twitter page right
he's
now.
He's answering fans' questions
it's
on Twitter
actually
right now.
Him.
No, it is him.
Is it him?
It is him. He's answering fans' questions on Twitter right now. So if you go to @LeafsBB20.
Is that a promotion or are you just doing it?
He's just doing it. He's just answering.
Well, that's a real original Twitter background, the Leafs logo.
But the ironic part is you don't actually know. He doesn't actually tell you what the question is. He's just @tweeting at people answering questions.
Brian, you better serve just not reading people's tweets. I don't think there's any creative. I mean,
well, I wasn't talking
about. Can I give another Ezzy for most boring Twitter account to Brian Burke?
No. But anyways, you just did. The reason I wanted to talk about Brian Burke isn't because he's on Twitter right now answering questions. It's because, the rumors that Luke Shen is on his way out of Toronto. God.
Yeah, of course. Because if you can trade Luke Shen, you're going to because he's overrated. I mean, I don't know who's trading. They're not getting James Van Riemsdyk straight up for Luke Shen.
I heard that yesterday.
The most ridiculous trades come out of Toronto. Ryan Getzlaff was going there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's unreal. I don't believe anything anymore. When there's actually a trade that happens, it's usually worse than you'd actually ever imagine.
Well, I'm driving to my car last night, and,
You're driving to your car?
I'm driving in my car last night, and I'm listening. It was Gary was talking to Dennis Bayak on HNL, and he said, the rumor is, Luke Shen for James Van Riemsdyk. As soon as I heard that, car literally drove it into the river.
Yeah.
Right into the river.
That trade is not happening.
Into the river,
that trade. First off, that trade has never been formulated at any serious general manager level, and it's not happening. So
now, give Burke credit. He told Shen, he might be traded. So he didn't.
He didn't lie to him. Which is, you know,
because he gave him a contract for a player who's overrated.
Yeah, and Bob Murray also said that all these guys were available in Anaheim. They're not going anywhere.
Every player in the NHL
is available.
Is available.
That's right.
Period.
Not true.
Unless Crosby
is not available.
Well, I mean, unless you have a complete and total no trade clause,
somebody's going to give him a ton of players for Sidney Crosby with all his concussion problems. I bet you they'd probably consider
Sidney Crosby equals
Anaheim off limits. Calls Pittsburgh tomorrow and says, "We want Crosby, and we'll give you Getzlaff and Ryan."
Nope, unavailable.
I would do that trade.
No, Drew Crosby is unavailable. I mean, show.
Yeah, but I mean, aside from maybe Jonathan Taves, I don't know if anybody's unavailable.
You think Taves over Crosby?
I do, because of the concussion. But I mean, this is not a discussion about that. Next topic.
I like really how Drew. I like how Richie is pushing the next topic. I like this.
You know, you're making.
It's time to take back the night. Sorry, the morning.
Take back the morning. Yeah.
Take back the morning.
Oh God.
Leafs, Red Wings, University of Michigan Stadium next year, supposedly for the Winter Classic.
Interesting.
115,000 people.
The big house.
The big house in Ann Arbor.
That's what the capacity of that stadium is.
Well, it's, I think for hockey they can make it that big.
Not to be confused with Al Arbor.
115,000?
Yeah, the big house. That's why it's called big house.
Oh, it's called the big house. Okay. Now that makes sense.
That's a lot of people. Thoughts
I'm
on
happy that they're doing
it's
Canadian.
It's a lot of hot dogs.
They're doing Canadian. Yeah, they're doing Canadian American.
It's a lot of rum huts.
Yeah, Canadian American. I like that. Obviously, there's a point Schultz, I think, made in the Globe. That,
original six.
That is original six, but also there's so many American players on the Leafs, like Kessel and those guys. So they can.
He's Canadian.
He's Canadian. So they can advertise about the, you know, a guy like Kessel and like, you know what? There's a cachet in an original six. I like the idea. I have no problem with it.
I think this idea is a little bit overrated.
Oh, the outdoor game, yeah, because the game actually sucks.
No, I just mentioned Phaneuf, overrated.
Oh yeah.
Drew, missed that, Richie. You didn't even pick up on that.
We're going over that whole list. The overrated list.
Oh, it's a great list.
You're like number six on
I that. Think that overrated list is actually underrated.
You think the overrated list is underrated?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the underrated list is overrated.
That just doesn't make any sense.
See, Richie's always laughing. Drew doesn't find me funny.
115,000 people, first of all, they'll get it because of the Toronto fans.
Do
they have enough parking spots for that?
Well, they have to. It's not like they're building a new stadium for it. It's a football.
It's called the big parking lot.
Yeah. Next to the big house, it's the big parking lot. Exactly. It's college football in a nutshell.
Apparently,
Ohio
college
State.
Football is popular in the U.S.
I wait for Columbus. I hear Columbus is going to try and do it at Ohio State. You know, what's that called? What's that stadium called?
What? Ohio State?
Yeah.
I have no clue.
It's the Show Me State.
No, that's Missouri.
It's Missouri, is it?
You're going to be in Missouri.
I don't know what Ohio State's. I forget what it's called. I forget the Buckeyes. In any event, Columbus should worry about trying to win over 10 games a year, and then we'll talk about them. They're not getting anywhere close to the Winter Classic.
Zero playoff wins in the history of the franchise. Yeah.
Well, of course. I mean, zero. I mean,
that's
we
why.
Haven't talked
that's
about
why they
Scott
need to get
being fired.
Oh yeah. Arneal being fired.
Terrible decision.
You know, for them to give Scott Housen the ability to fire Scott Arneal is weird because Scott Housen's done a poor job there, frankly.
It sounds like that was a poisonous atmosphere in the
Arneal
locker room.
Wasn't well liked in the locker room. I mean, who knows the whole story, but at the end of the day, guys, they both didn't post the results, and this is a results-driven business. And are they as bad as their record? No, they actually aren't as bad as their record. But you know, and Arneal, if you look back at it, you know, I know there's only 30 jobs in the National Hockey League, but if you asked him candidly off the record whether he would take that job looking at it now, he'd probably say no.
Of course not. He waits another year and he gets the Jets job.
Yeah.
There's only 30 jobs in the NHL. Why did I quit my current job? I thought there was an opening.
There is. You're just not eligible for it. That's all.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Drew overrated list.
It's not the Drew overrated list. Sorry. I'm properly rated. Poorly. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
Did he give 100?
You really haven't learned anything about the art of radio broadcasting in the last number of years, have you?
I'm a professional radio broadcaster.
Something like that.
I'm an accredited member of the Hockey Broadcasters Association of Winnipeg.
One final segment. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Our good friend Dave Coulier.
Coming back. Are we going? He's back.
January 26th through 28th.
Yeah.
Was it
Gretzky's birthday?
Was it your birthday last time?
Yeah, he came for my 19th birthday. We played some puck with
Yeah,
Joey.
Uncle Joey.
Yeah.
There's Dave Coulier. You have a picture of it.
Made him play in a Red Wings jersey.
Well, it was a fact. I pick him up at the airport. This is either last time or two times ago he was at Rumors. I pick him up at the airport. He's only in town for 3 days or so and comes off the airplane with two huge bags. And Dave, what's in the two bags? Oh, I brought my hockey equipment in case I can pick up a game. I say, perfect, we have a game scheduled for tonight. And that's how Richard's 19th birthday, we all ended up playing hockey with Uncle Joey, Dave
Coulier. Yeah, we made him wear a Red Wings jersey. It was actually our friend Neil's Red Wings jersey.
Yeah.
And he had never taken off the hanger. And then Dave Coulier ended up wiping out in the jersey and getting snow all over
it. And Neil was nervous.
Yeah. Dave also was mad at Neil for playing two long shifts.
Really?
Yeah. Dave Coulier. Bit of an ice hog.
Neil's a bit of an ice hog.
Dave Coulier, a very good hockey player.
Yeah, he was really good.
And a very good comedian at Rumors, January 26th through 28th.
Cut it out.
Coulier wasn't even mad that I tried to hip check him.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
One final segment, and we're thrilled to welcome Sean Gordon from the Globe and Mail. Sean, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Doing very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm not so bad, thanks.
That's good. Sean, first question. I mean, it seems it's the never-ending year of chaos in Montreal. Just how chaotic is it, I mean, after the latest trade?
This is as chaotic as it's been, I think, since the centennial year, as you'll recall, with the whole the Kovalev holiday and the mobsters and all the rumors about Carey Price and Chris Higgins and Mike Komisarek and, you know, the trades and the injuries and everything like that. This is about as mental as it gets, I would suggest. This being said, I mean, it's, you know, I wonder sometimes about whether people are getting carried away. I mean, this is not as bad a hockey team, I don't think, as it seems. But what are you going to do, right? I mean, people live and die with every goal for and every goal against. And, you know, I think that now it's picking up the pieces and buying a bunch of discount Mike Camilleri swag. So this is how it is.
Sean, are the rumors true that there was some type of dislike for Mike Camilleri in that Habs dressing room?
Yeah, you know what, that's an interesting question, and you know what, to be honest, I don't know that there's a clear answer to that. I mean, I kind of think that Camilleri is the sort of he's a bit of a polarizing personality, and I mean, he's, you know, look, as I was talking to a guy yesterday, and I asked him, I said point blank, was this guy a problem in the room? And the answer was not really, no, but he's a goal scorer, and goal scorers are a strange breed. You know, like he's certainly, I mean, Camilleri is the first person to admit that he's a high maintenance guy. And I think that, if you show me a 40 goal scorer, or someone who has a ceiling as a 40 goal guy, I will show you someone who is a selfish player, thinks about himself first.
It sounds like
excuse me. I'm in the car with my little boy.
Oh, no, we've got two members of the Gordon family.
He wants to participate in the conversation. He is, of course, a diehard hockey fan, despite being 2.5.
If he flies here, he can replace Ezzy for the last 5 minutes of the show.
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, was Camilleri disliked? I think dislike is probably too strong a term. I think that, you know, teams that aren't successful inevitably find themselves at each other's throats, right? I mean, if you ask me whether a room is happy, I think I would probably tell you that, you know, winning rooms are happy and losing rooms aren't, right? I mean, it's just kind of how it is.
What was his relationship like with definitely interim head coach Randy Cunningworth?
Yeah, you know, I think he had a fractious relationship with the coaching staff. And, I mean, you know, part of it, I think, is maybe philosophical. I don't think that Randy Cunningworth, unfortunately for him, because he, by all appearances, is a very good guy and he's a very strong hockey man, former Jet, of course, he is a guy who I don't think is in a very good situation, and it's not his doing. I think that basically this whole interim thing has sabotaged, I think, any kind of authority that he would have had in that room. And you know, I don't think it's a secret that that he and Camilleri butted heads. I don't think it's a secret that he's butted heads with other members of the leadership group. And also some players, like, you know, I think it's fair to say that PK Subban and he are not necessarily always on the same page. And, you know, it's always how it is, right? The coach has to be the boss. He's not there to be their friend. And I think one of the things that hurts Cunningworth is that in his previous role as an assistant coach, he was actually paid to be the good cop. He was sort of the new Kirk Muller. right. You know, the player's buddy, as opposed to the designated SOB. And I think that when you become the head man, you find yourself in a situation where you're trying to reinvent yourself on the fly, and it's not an ideal situation for him. So I think very likely that there were some disagreements involving involving Camilleri and other players. Whether those disagreements were of the irreconcilable sort, I guess we'll never really know. I mean, Cunningworth basically said yesterday, he was asked the question, is Mike Camilleri a hard guy to coach, a hard guy to work with? And the answer was an unequivocal no, right? So, I mean, it's you know, that was his chance. That was his chance to carve the guy, and he didn't take it. So I'm gonna just take it at face value and suggest to you that it was probably just the regular kind of employer-employee type of disagreement.
Sean, are the cap savings that the Habs get from the Bork Camilleri deal, in the short term negated by the long term commitment to Bork?
I think it probably does. That's not a contract that I'm a big fan of, in the sense that you've got four more years of this guy. He's already 30 years old.
Yeah.
You know, but it's mitigated. You're right. I mean, it's one of those things where I was talking to an agent yesterday, about sort of the whole Habs situation and the rumors that are involving various possibilities for deals and other players that might be interested in. And the agent sort of said, well, you know, bear in mind that Bork is probably he's a movable commodity if ever they decided that they wanted to get out from under that contract, probably more so than, say, Thomas Cabrerly. So, yeah, I guess it is kind of the key factor. I mean, according to CapGeek.com, they've got about $8 million to play with, when you factor in, because it's a complicated calculation in terms of, you know, the money that they get from injured players who may or may not return, like Brian Gionta and Andrei Markov, and you know, if you've got that kind of cap room, I'm going to suggest to you that it makes it possible to take on, you know, some serious salary if they were able to get an impact player. You know, I say this with no sort of inside knowledge, just for argument's sake. If they wanted to, say, take on Eric Staal, they could do it, right? Or any number of players who may or may not be available between now and the deadline.
Sean, you know, you mentioned Andrei Markov, and that probably mistake was probably exacerbated by the Cabrerly acquisition, which you also mentioned. But, you know, just in terms of Pierre Gauthier, is he there for the long term? And if he's not, why is he allowed to make all these moves now?
Yeah, you know what? I don't think he's there for the long term, I think the leash gets shorter with every passing game. I think he's there because they don't have anyone to replace him. I do think he probably has to operate within certain strictures. But you know, again, that's anybody's guess. The organization is extremely opaque, as you guys know. So it's a situation where you won't really find anything out until after it's happened. But my suspicion is that he is indeed on a very short rope and or a very short leash. And I think he's in a situation where, he has to tread carefully with the moves that he makes. Now, in a sense, I think probably the controversy surrounding Camilleri forced everyone's hand. But, you know, I don't think that they're done. But, you know, the extent to which Pierre Gauthier is actually going to be driving the bus is a very important question, and one that we just don't have any answers to for the moment.
Sean, we'll let you go on this last question. What's the next move for this organization in flux, as the case may be?
Yeah, you know, I think the next move, it's an odd thing because they're a team that's lost, what, 7 or 8 games in overtime in the shootout. They've had leads in 10 or 12 games this year in the third period, or certainly after two periods, that they haven't been able to hold. I mean, if they win half those games, we're not having this conversation, right? It's the margins are very small, and I think that there is still some belief in this organization. So I don't necessarily think that there's going to be anything radical other than possibly jettisoning some more contract if they can. Like, I think if they could find a taker for Scott Gomez, they would gladly unload him. Or, I mean, if push comes to shove, I mean, maybe he's a guy that they end up burying in the minors a la Wade Redden. But I think very likely that the moves that you're going to be seeing in the next little while are going to be incremental moves, not radical ones. And I think that the direction for this team has now been set. They want to get bigger. And the Smurfs experiment, I think it's fair to say, is over. I think that's probably what you're going to see. But, hey, you know what? If this team continues losing, if they're still in 12th place after the All-Star break, all bets are off.
Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us. Say hi to your son
welcome.
For us.
And thank you. Yes, thank you for having Oscar on the air with you as well. I think I will tell him this story about how he was on the radio, and I think he'll enjoy that a great deal.
Sounds good. We'll send you the audio. Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail, have a good Saturday.
Thanks for calling
us
back.
You as well.
Thanks. Take care, Sean. No time for cheers and jeers this week, boys. That's it for this show. Big thank yous to the following guests. Jason Ferris from Behind the Moves, the great new book. Matt Lachlan, Devils radio voice. You'll hear him on WFAN today, Jets Devils, coming up at 2 o'clock here on the station. Jeremy Rutherford, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. George Johnson, Calgary Herald. Sean Gordon, The Globe and Mail. Thank you to our sponsors, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, The Cheer Bar and Grill, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. If you want to become a sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, email us, info@illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
Check out my game day preview at IllegalCurve.com. Dave Manuka's just posted it.
There you go.